And we're back in the podcast cockpit. Reggie, the navigator and first mate, the Gilligan, if you will. Do you need to Google Gilligan? Reg, do you know when I make a reference to Gilligan? You're kind of iffy on that. Google Gilligan. You'll get what I mean. I am the skipper. Okay, little buddy? You'll get all these references when you Google Gilligan's Island. Okay. Anyway. Gosh. All right. Well, let's go then. I'm ready. Needles are jumping. Mic is hot. Talent is hotter. So let's start this thing. Okay. Put it in the book. Episode 209er. About to take off from the one way. 209er. Okay, you ready? I'll give you my three S's and we'll get going here. Star, smile, strong. There we go. Ready, Reg? Hit that button at the precise time. Here we go. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Nice. Welcome to another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you download your favorite podcast. We are there. So subscribe, rate, and tell your friends about Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. We are the only podcast, I believe, to have the designation as both binge-worthy by the Good Housekeeping Seal of Approval of podcasts, as well as essential listening by the COVID-19 Committee of Essential Elements of Society. We are essential workers. We are essential. And we have been going continuously during this pandemic. Oh, you may have your sports heroes, but where have they been for the last 8 weeks? I don't know. I know where I've been. Right here, serving the people, serving the podcasters and the podcasting audience with quality entertainment and information. Just like we've been doing now for 4 years and counting. Thanks for the kind wishes, everybody. A lot of people sent their kind wishes of this podcast celebrating its fourth anniversary. And we are now pushing toward five. And so thank you for your loyalty and your devotion. I say it every week and I mean it with all my heart. It is a really cool thing. And there are several people that comment and send along their good wishes on a regular basis on my Facebook page, and I really appreciate that, and you folks know who you are, and thank you so much, because that is a huge part as to why I'm doing this. I enjoy it, certainly, but you know, I talk to myself 23 hours a day. So I could certainly do that 24 hours a day and not record it, you know, but it's when I sit down and actually record it for that 1 hour of the 23 hours, at least, when I record the podcast, it's because of you. 'Cause I'm talking to myself all the time. I mean, I could be doing, you know, 24-hour podcast, marathon. I could just be. I'm always. I've been talking to myself for years. It's a captive audience, first of all, and it's an interesting audience, and an audience that I'm interested in entertaining. As Woody Allen's great joke is, "Don't knock masturbation. It's with sex with someone I love." I feel the same way. I like talking to myself. It's talking to somebody who I know will listen. And I know who's interested. But thankfully, there's at least there's some of you out there who find me as interesting as I find myself, and I appreciate your loyalty. And please, as I said earlier at the top of the podcast, don't be afraid to pass it on and tell your friends what your favorite podcast is. Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. So thank you so much. And if you like what you hear and you want to hear more, if one a week isn't enough, hey, I've got a stockpile. You talk about President Trump talking about stockpiles of ventilators. We've got tremendous ventilators. We've got tremendous ventilators. We've got all these ventilators. Tremendous ventilators. We've got tremendous podcasts stockpiled. If you need them for your health, we have been manufacturing podcasts now for more than 4 years, and we've been stockpiling them, and they're easy to get to. Very simple. They don't have to be shipped. Nobody has to, you know, you have to make a request for those, just like those tremendous ventilators that we have stockpiled. No, no. The stockpile of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic podcasts are there. They're waiting for you. They're just waiting. They're stockpiled for you, waiting for you when you want them. So go to WGN Radio, go to the podcast section, and then you will see a list of all the podcasts. There you will see a prompt for this podcast, Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Hit that and go nuts. There's 208 episodes just waiting for you to listen if you haven't. And if you have, so what? Go listen again. What do you got to do? Where are you going? You can't use an excuse anymore. Jeez, I'm really busy. Can't use the busy excuse anymore. For the last 2 months, you can't use that one. I'm not buying it. I never bought it before, but I'm certainly not buying it now. So 208 are back there, stockpiled, tremendous. They're tremendous. They're just like our ventilators. They're tremendous podcasts. Tremendous, right, Doctor? Aren't they tremendous podcasts? So please go back there. And that only can mean one thing, that this is 209. 209er. And I'm in the cockpit ready to take off here. We're ready to make 209er take off. So strap in for the next, well, who knows how long I've been talking now. Let me check on that official timer there. Wow, already 7 minutes, almost 8 minutes. In theory, there's 52 minutes left, but as you know, Elton Jim podcasts abide by no time clock. They're over when they're over. They're as long as they need to be. But thank you so much, as I said, to many people that sent some very nice messages about the fourth anniversary. And so tell your friends and keep, you keep listening. I'll keep talking. So what I wanted to talk about today is something that struck me right toward the beginning of the whole pandemic. And then I sort of forgot about it. And now in the last 2 or 3 weeks, it really came back into my mind and is more relevant now as ever. And so I thought I should talk about it and make you aware of this if you're not already aware of it. And if you are, maybe you haven't thought about it or seen it in a while, and this will jog your memory. And once again, the great thing about this thing, about this time, unless you're a medical professional, unless you're a nurse or a doctor or an ambulance driver or anyone that is caring for patients, whether they're in nursing homes or in hospitals, unless you're in that world, which I'm sure feels like a 24-hour world of busyness. It's always a 24-hour day, right? But if not, you're not the rest of us. You have some spare time on your hands. Well, if you do, then I'm suggesting that just for some entertainment as well as a cautionary tale. And I'm not trying to get political here at all. If you know me at all and you listen to this podcast, listen to me on the radio, I try not to get political because of the fact that, especially in today's world, it's always been that way, but I think today's world is even more. It's very divisive. It's sad that we're so divisive that we have closed our ears to other opinions. Some people are just, if you're not with me, you're with them. I always, as a young kid, I've always looked at the gray part of an issue. I've never been black and white. I've always been gray. And I think, as I said many times, part of that may have just been my natural inquisitiveness, but also having been a journalist and being trained as a journalist in my early career, I was of the school that you were supposed to be objective, not subjective. So it was my job to always play devil's advocate. And in today's world, you almost can't do that without being labeled on one side or the other. And what I find interesting is we all get all this junk mail now, right, in our email inboxes. And I'm proud of this, actually. It's a pain in the butt because I get so many of them on a daily basis, and I don't even read them. I simply delete them. But I'm heartened and proud of the fact, and I don't know how the heck, you know, I don't know all the technologies and the algorithms behind all this as to how this worked or what website I hit or what story I hit to read and how the, you know, Facebook or your emails grab this information and assimilate it and analyze it and then decide who you are or what you like or what you want. But you know that you get emails that reflect your likes and dislikes. It's mostly your likes, obviously, because they're looking to sell you something. Have you ever noticed if you've gone online and you've done some research on a topic or you've done some research on a certain kind of item that you maybe have bought or were thinking of buying, the next day or within hours, you will suddenly have emails that reflect that, or that stories like that will pop up on your different social media accounts? That's not coincidence, folks. That's what's driving this internet. It's not just information. It's getting into your pocketbooks, ultimately. Our pocketbooks. Mine, too. But what I'm so proud of, I guess, is in my email inbox, on a daily basis now, I am deluged by political emails from supporters on both the Democratic and the Republican side. I get emails from people that want me to donate to, the conservatives or to Donald Trump. And then I get people who want me to donate or read this, Joe Biden, we have to stop Trump. And then the other one is, we got to stop the Democrats. I mean, so clearly I'm proud of that in that I am not labeled on one side or the other because, they're both calling me fellow liberal and fellow conservative. So my goal of being in the middle somewhere, of being that gray middle, I guess it's not just my perception. It's true based on the algorithms and what I'm reading or what I'm, I don't know how they know, but I'm getting hit by both ends. No, really. So I'm proud of that. And so I said, I'm not trying to get political here, but I think there's a cautionary tale in what I want to talk about today. If you listen to me with any kind of regularity, you know I'm a major fan of old television and pop culture. As a little kid, television was a best friend to me. I was an only child. And so in those days, your mom said, go watch TV. There were no computers. There were no other things. And not to say that I was neglected. My mom and dad certainly put in a lot of time and a lot of interest and a lot of effort. But my point is that a lot of times, televisions were babysitters sometimes. And I was a willing, that was my favorite babysitter. I don't remember any babysitter coming over to my house to watch me, but I do remember my television as being a constant companion. So I grew up with television. I know a lot about it. It just seeps in my mind. I have a pretty good memory. So I'm really good at trivia, television, but not today. I mean, I have to even – I'm always the one that people want on their teams for Trivial Pursuit or trivia. But now I've noticed that, you know, the older I get, and I certainly try to keep up on things, but, you know, there's a whole area of current stuff that, you know, you just – it just goes past you now. So I'm good up until about 2000, I think. Not to say that I've been completely out of it for the last 18 or 19 or 20 years, but I certainly know my older stuff because I grew up with that and it was just seeping into my fertile brain as a little kid. And I still watch you know, some of my favorite shows from when I – and they were reruns even then. None of these shows – none of the shows that I really enjoy were even first run at the time. Although I do like All in the Family, and those I do remember watching as a young, very young kid, and laughing at it, and certainly the shows of the 70s. But I remember growing up on the reruns as of The Honeymooners. Jackie Gleason was one of my idols, and Andy Griffith, which I still watch, even the color versions. Yes, even the color versions after Barney left Mayberry. You know, and the Dick Van Dyke Show and The Odd Couple from the 70s and things like that. So I love old movies, and I love old comedians, and I love old actors, and I love the Marx Brothers, and so all this kind of stuff. One of my favorite shows that I can watch when they have marathons, I've seen them a million times, and it doesn't matter. Even though this show, you know, the real hook of this show that I'm going to talk about here was always the ending. It was always kind of the ironic twist. And even if you know the ironic twist, these shows were so compelling and so well written. And in many times they were so ahead of their time, not only in terms of the quality, but of the topics and the human questions that they raised. And I'm speaking, of course, of Rod Serling's The Twilight Zone. Now, everybody knows The Twilight Zone probably because of its unique theme song, you know. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. But Rod Serling really is one of our culture's greatest writers, certainly one of the important TV writers of all time. Sadly, he passed away at age 50. Very young. If you watch The Twilight Zone and later his shows, The Night Gallery, you saw him always smoking, and sadly he died, I believe, on the operating table during open-heart surgery when he was only 50 years old. So I'm sure all that smoking, while it looked cool during the 60s and 70s, I think it took a toll on Rod Serling's circulatory and arteries and heart, but wow, some of the things, those Twilight Zones remain as relevant today, and now they are 60 years old. The Twilight Zone debuted in 1960, I believe, maybe even 1959. But certainly, you know, 1960 is when it began its real run. And so that's 60 years. There are some shows today that are on that feel old and tired after the 22-minute mark as you're watching them. 60 years later and being shown almost every day somewhere, and to remain as interesting and relevant and to be able to capture new generations of fans despite their age and despite when they were made. And yes, they all are in black and white, God forbid. I love black and white. I know there's some people that won't watch a movie unless it's in black and white. Wow, have you missed some of the great movies and television shows of all time if you are one of those people that have some weird aversion to black and white film? Then you've missed pretty much some of the greatest movies and TV shows of the last 50 or 60 years, more than that, 60 or 70 years, and you've deprived yourself of that great entertainment for some stupid reason that you don't like black and white film? Wow. I'll never understand that. But The Twilight Zone is just a classic television show. I don't, you know, there's nothing that I'm going to say here that's going to be new news to people that are aware of it. But if you have never heard The Twilight Zone, A, where have you been? And B, you've got time to find it out. It's on Netflix. It's on one of those things. So just look up The Twilight Zone. And if you want to really binge on something, everybody's saying, what do we binge on during a pandemic? If you haven't seen The Twilight Zone in a long time, or if you've never seen The Twilight Zone, I would suggest that if you want something to binge on that is going to stay with you and compel you not only within that half hour, and there are even some hour episodes, compel you within that, but they're going to stay with you and you'll remember them. And you'll remember them for years later, and you will say this, and you will find yourself saying, wow, this reminds me of that one Twilight Zone episode. Anybody who knows The Twilight Zone, you know you've always said that. You have said that many times. Oh, this is just like that Twilight Zone episode. That's how insightful, intelligent, prescient. It's unbelievable. And at the same time, it's not, because at the end of the day, what Rod Serling was doing, even though he was putting some ironic and absurd twists on things, he was talking. The reason why The Twilight Zone is timeless, why it is relevant, while it speaks to us 60 years later as if it was written today, is because stripped of all the eeriness of it and stripped of all the absurdity or the twists or anything else, The Twilight Zone was about the human condition. It was about people. It was about human emotion. It was about human beings and our behaviors. And that hasn't changed. Our society has changed. But really, humans have not changed all that much. Our surroundings have. But in terms of our behavior and how we think and things that we do, sadly, it's either in our DNA or it's something that we just can't change or don't want to change. But human behavior has been pretty consistent over the centuries. It's pretty consistent from when the cavemen were around. We're a little more sophisticated, but we don't act all that much different. And that's why I think The Twilight Zone is so relevant and why it will always be timeless, because it will speak, it spoke to the human condition. And it just goes to show you that here's a show that's 60 years old. So if some of these episodes ring so true 60 years later, then clearly we haven't changed all that much, have we? And that was, I think, the brilliance of what Rod Serling was doing. He was putting things into the future. He was putting things into a fictional world. He was taking things to the extreme. But he was always starting with and being grounded in the human condition. And that includes not only the good parts of the human condition, but also our flaws. And many times what Rod Serling was trying to do was expose our flaws to us, to make us think and to make us change and to make us see what we were doing wrong and how can we get better. And sadly, many of the Twilight Zone episodes that are relevant like that are still relevant today when it comes to race or prejudice. And once again, that was 60 years ago. Yes, we've moved the needle. There's no question. We've moved the needle somewhat forward in how we deal with one another. But in the grand scope of things, it's moved, you know, not even a quarter inch, not even a 16th of an inch in terms of where we've started, of how old mankind is. So that's what makes The Twilight Zone, to me, such a special show, is that it was always questioning, always testing, and always revealing the human condition, and was there to send a message and make a point and make you think. Sometimes it made you laugh. Sometimes it made you cry. It always made you feel, but I think it always made you think. And that was the brilliance of Rod Serling. So during this pandemic, I I can't get this out of my head, and now over the last 3 weeks, it's really come to fruition, and it's the phrase. This reminds me of that one Twilight Zone episode. And so if you know the Twilight Zone, not as well as I do, but even if you know it casually, you may have seen this. But I would encourage you to go and binge on the Twilight Zone. And if you've never watched the Twilight Zone, yes, okay, spoiler alert, it's in black and white. You have to get over that aversion, which is ridiculous. So get over that, please. But secondly, it's streamed somewhere. I think it's on Netflix or it might be on Amazon. It's readily available, I believe. So it's not like you have to pay for it. But go back, and if you've never watched The Twilight Zone, I mean these are very cliched, but these are some of the best episodes that'll really get you to enjoy what Rod Serling was all about in The Twilight Zone. So I'll give you a couple of titles just to, if you've never watched it, or maybe you haven't watched it in a long time, and to get your juices flowing for a little Twilight Zone binging. But yeah, there's a few memorable episodes. There's one called Time Enough at Last with Burgess Meredith, who played the Penguin from Batman. He was actually a very accomplished actor. Sadly, most people know him as the Penguin from Batman. he also played in Of Mice and Men, too. And he was also Mickey from Rocky, the trainer. I mean, Burgess Meredith had quite a career on the stage as well in films, but he's known mostly as being the Penguin from Batman. But there's a great episode called Time Enough at Last about a guy who longs to read and loves reading and is criticized for reading. And then something happens which gives him all the time in the world to read. And that's all I will say. You'll love that episode. There's one called The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, which is very telling about the human condition. About a small town street where people are guided by fear. The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. That's another great one. The Masks, a very eerie one about people's true identities and how they put a certain face forward to the public, but their real face is somewhere deep inside, and it's not always pretty. The Masks is a great one. I can go on forever. Those are two or three that hit me. There was another one called The Third Planet from the Sun. Great twist at the end with Fitzweaver. Third Planet from the Sun. You want to see that one. But all I would say is you can't go wrong with just hitting the play button and letting these Twilight Zone episodes just keep running. The Sci-Fi Network on cable and on your satellite system will frequently have a marathon on holiday weekends, like 4th of July and you know, some 3 or 4 day holidays like that. They'll sometimes play them from, you know, Friday through Monday, all night, all day, Twilight Zone episodes. It's great. So if you don't have a streaming service, just keep an eye open for the Sci-Fi Network, which most cable systems have. And they will have and I'm sure they have a website, and they'll announce that there, but look for that. So, yes, I'm doing a commercial for The Twilight Zone because it's one of my favorite TV shows. In fact, I have a Twilight Zone watch. It's really cool. I love my Twilight Zone watch. It has that distinct Twilight Zone logo. But the episode I want to talk about today, to me, is very relevant to what's going on today. And I always felt it was always a favorite episode of mine, and it always seemed a little, you know, oh well, that's one of these that it's interesting, this fictionalized little scenario, but this will never really happen. It could never really happen, even though elements of it were so true. But you looked at the whole wide range of it and you say, well, that whole scenario, yes, some of the behavior that people are showing is, once again, classic human behavior. But the overall scenario is a little far-fetched. Well, is it or isn't it? There is an episode of The Twilight Zone called The Old Man in the Cave. And The Old Man in the Cave was first aired in November of 1963, okay? So that's 57 years ago. 57 years ago. And as what's so great about watching the Twilight Zone episodes as well is that many of the episodes star either people that went on to great fame, and this is their first, their beginnings of their careers, and you see them on these TV shows, on this TV show, and then you say, my gosh, like I said, I mentioned Burgess Meredith, who was on many episodes of the Twilight Zone, but the great actor Lee Marvin is on a Twilight Zone. And, there's dozens of great actors who were on the Twilight Zone, actors and actresses who got their start. And you will see many familiar faces, many of them either established stars at the time or people that had small roles that went on 10 or 15 years later to become household names. So that's what's great about watching the Twilight Zone as well. And this is one of those situations in that this episode stars the actor James Coburn. Now, you may or may not know that name, but he won an Academy Award about 10 or 15 years ago. He was also in those movies called In Like Flint. He was in a lot of movies, good actor. Toward the end of his life, he had salt and pepper, grayish black hair. But James Coburn, a future Academy Award winner. Also, John Marley. And you say, who's John Marley, Jim? Well, if you're a fan of The Godfather, the great character who sadly is in one of the most unforgettable scenes in all of movie history. That's who John Marley is. You say, Jim, wow, how could I not know this guy's name if he is in one of the most famous scenes in all of TV, or in all of film history? Well, John Marley plays the studio head, Mr. Waltz, in The Godfather. He is the character who wakes up in the morning and finds his horse's head cut off in his bed sheets and screams, ah, ah, ah! That's John Marley. Well, before The Godfather, 10 years or 8 years before The Godfather, here's John Marley in this episode of The Twilight Zone. It's called The Old Man in the Cave. If you don't watch any other Twilight Zone episodes, if you say, Jim, I've tried to watch The Twilight Zone, or I heard about it, or it's black and white, whatever your excuse is about The Twilight Zone, all I would ask is that you please put that on hold for this episode and watch it now, because it is so relevant in today's world. So, and you go on the streaming service and you can watch any episode you want. So that's what's good about that. But a lot of times when they have these marathons, they will also play this episode. So that's a good thing too. So I'm just throwing that out to you. It's on the Twilight Zone. The title is called The Old Man in the Cave. There's also the lead actor in this is a guy named John Anderson, who's been in a lot of Twilight Zone episodes. If you ever watch The Twilight Zone, you will recognize John Anderson. He plays he's obviously a good actor and was in several of these Twilight Zone episodes. But this one just, I've always enjoyed this episode. And the last two or three weeks have really, I've watched it. I've looked it up and I haven't been able to get it out of my mind. And so I thought I would pass this on to you. So I'm not going to give it away, but I guess I am to some extent, because it doesn't matter, because I still want you to see it, even though you might know the ending. And maybe I won't tell you the ending, but I'll set up the scenario to at least pique your interest, to at least that you to explain how it's so relevant in today's world. So what I have been most impressed about, at least what, 2 months, maybe a month and a half or so ago, was when these lockdowns started across the country, around the world, in early March. I don't know about you, but I was amazed when you would see pictures of previously just crowded cities like New York and Venice and London and in Chicago where I live and these in Rome, you know, these classic cities and these classic meeting areas, these classic downtowns and public squares that on a daily basis you know, are just packed with people, tourists and people that live in these cities. And it was amazing during the early days of the lockdown and even into the first 2 or 3 weeks of the lockdown where you would see these empty streets of these cities that were usually just shoulder to shoulder, just masses of humanity. And I was really surprised and impressed at how people were voluntarily following these guidelines to stay in and not walk around and not spread this COVID-19. And I was shocked because part of me feared when we were telling people this that this could not last long, that at the end of the day, people were going to get bored and restless and indignant and angry and frustrated, and we were going to have chaos on our hands. And yet, for the first 2 or 3 weeks, if not longer, they would show these pictures of Times Square and downtown and Chicago and, as I said, St. Peter's Square and in Rome, or, you know, Westminster Bridge in England or in London. And you're saying, wow, people are staying in. This is amazing. It's unheard of. There's a movie called Vanilla Sky with Tom Cruise. And I think they even do this kind of a image in the Devil's Advocate with Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino, where they have a New York street and it's completely deserted. And back then, it seemed like that was the most impossible picture that would, you know, talk about pure fantasy, because how could you have that? New York could never be desolate. Well, New York for many months and still in many areas has been and still is desolate. So I was very impressed with people following the rules voluntarily, really. And I was like, wow, I can't believe this is holding up. Well, of course, and what I feared has come to pass, that there came a point, I don't know where it was, I don't know why it was, I don't know when it was, but suddenly there was, I don't know if it was collective, I don't know if it started one place, and sadly, we talked about the human condition, well, sadly, you know, the human condition, we are lemmings, and by that I mean we follow the crowd, and especially when it's something we want to do, if we see other people doing it, that becomes our excuse. Well, they did it, so why can't I? And my gosh, doesn't that sound just like you did when you were 7 in first grade and you got caught doing something? Well, he's talking. Well, she did it. Well, she cheated. I mean, our first line of defense as little kids when we got caught doing something was that we always looked away from ourselves and compared ourselves to other people doing things. And in our minds, that excused our own behavior. And what's so funny, as I said about some things about human behavior and human condition never changing, what's going on now? I remember preaching early on that patience and resistance was to me the most important thing, to not get back too soon, to resist the temptation to do things that you wanted to do, but you know you shouldn't do because of this virus and the spreading and the potential it does to make people very sick, if not kill them. And so I was impressed for a long time that as a as a species, as the human species, not just the United States, but around the world. You saw those pictures of people singing on their balconies in Italy because the streets were deserted. For the first month or so, people were following those guidelines, following those safety rules, following those suggestions, if you will, to stay in so that we can beat this virus. And I don't know what it was or who it was or how it was, but suddenly there was this universal feeling that somehow we beat the virus and that it was time to get back to normal and to reopen things. And I've talked about this before. I get it. From an economic standpoint, we have to do that. I know that. And what's so difficult about this is that the two main pressures that we have right now is public health and the economy. And the sad part is that the demands of those are completely opposite. They're polar opposites. There's no overlap there. Because what we need to do for the public safety is the exact opposite of what we need to do to open our economy. So that's why there's so much turmoil right now and so much unease and so much tension and so much push and pull because, you know, so many governors and mayors and leaders, they understand and they empathize with. And they get that we you know, people need to put food on their tables and they need to work. And so, yes, that is a real problem. That is a real fear and that is a real issue that needs to be addressed. But then we also have this other thing that is real in terms of public health that talks about our fellow people on this earth dying and we somehow contributing to that. So that's what's difficult here. And so now the last 3 or 4 weeks, we have seen many cities, many leaders defying the guidelines, opening up, not following the protocols. We've got these protests in some states like in Michigan where it's been mob rule. It's been scary to watch that because not only are these protesters protesting angrily, but they're protesting in a way that is exactly against every safety protocol. They're not wearing masks. They're not social distancing. And so I hope that we're not going to see a spike, you know, in some of these areas that are either protesting all the time or beginning to open up some public areas maybe too soon. And what is too soon? And here's the thing. No one has the answer. Nobody knows anything here. We are making this up as we go along. There are no experts in how to handle this. There are experts in infectious disease. And there are experts in economies, but we don't know yet what this virus is, what it will do today, what it will do tomorrow, what it will do 2 years from now, what it does to our bodies while we get it, or what it may leave behind after it leaves us. There is more uncertainty than certainty here. I get it. And that's why we're in this gray area. And I understand the passions and the needs on both sides. And it plays right into this episode of The Twilight Zone called The Old Man in the Cave. Now, it's not completely apples to apples. It's not about a pandemic, but it's about a nuclear holocaust. And you have to remember now, in 1960, we're in the midst of the Cold War, we're right in the middle of the Cold War, and the Cuban Missile Crisis is right around the corner, In fact, in 1963 now, we've already had the Cuban Missile Crisis when this episode appeared. In fact, this I don't know the exact date. I should look that up. But this episode appeared in November of 1963, which obviously is when John F. Kennedy was assassinated. I wonder if this was before or after that assassination. So we've already seen the Cuban Missile Crisis, and we have felt the fear of a nuclear war. We've seen the bomb already dropped, 20 years before that in Japan, the nuclear bomb, an atom bomb, and now we are worried about nuclear war. So, of course, if you're writing a cautionary tale, a lot of the Twilight Zone episodes did deal with a nuclear bomb and what would happen, what if kind of thing. And that's what happens in this episode. So it's not a pandemic, but it is a similar scenario in that people are uncertain. There's devastation. And the problem is obviously the fallout from the nuclear, reaction and the bomb is that, you know, great numbers of the population have been killed. And so in the United States, where this takes place, the bomb has been dropped. The world is just kind of trying to find its way. There's nuclear contamination all around the world. And the United States just has pockets of survivors around it. There's no real strong government. It's kind of every man for themselves. And there's pockets of people that are living just barely. And it's kind of mob rule. And that's the real point of this episode, is we cannot give in to mob rule. And that's why I think this is relevant today, because what I'm afraid is happening is that there's a lot of protests and a lot of pushing. You know, people are either bored or they're desperate. Whatever the motivation is to open our society, it's beginning to cascade. It's beginning, the dominoes are falling and everybody's saying yes, yes, yes. Meanwhile, the medical experts are saying there's still dangers here, folks. Even if you open up a restaurant, even if you open up a beach, you still have to wear a mask. You still have to stay 6 feet away, and people aren't following that. Did you see what happened in Wisconsin recently? There was an order that the lockdown order, the governor couldn't enforce that, and within hours, people ran to bars, were sitting next to each other with no masks, drinking, laughing, arms around each other, eating off the same plates. It was unbelievable. But yet it wasn't unbelievable. But we're sitting there saying, yes, we're going to open things up, but we still can't just abandon this idea of trying to mitigate this disease. So in that way, this episode of The Twilight Zone is very relevant, because it's basically a story about logic and patience versus mob rule, which is, I think, what's going on right now. So I'm not going to give the whole thing away, but I just want to set up the scenario. So there's a small pocket of people in a deserted town, and they have survived for a year or so. But the way they've survived is by getting some information from supposedly an old man in a cave nearby. And there's one member of this group who goes and visits the old man, and he comes back and he says to the people, okay, the old man says it's okay to plant over in this area because this land has not been contaminated. Or the old man says it's okay to eat apples from these trees in this one area because they're not contaminated. But the old man says, no, we can't eat those canned goods that are in that general store there. And this is an abandoned city now. I mean, people are just kind of, it looks like an old West city. no, we can't eat those canned goods because those are contaminated. Or no, we can't drink those bottles of wine there because those are contaminated. And the old man gives this member of the group this information. And so while it certainly is not a fun life, while it certainly is a frustrating life, it's a life that is finding people bored and angry and just barely surviving, but they are surviving. They are alive. And at the end of the day, that's what this one guy's name, Mr. Goldsmith, keeps preaching to these people. The old man says we can't do that. And people are arguing, but we want to eat that food. Why can't we eat that food? And he says, because the old man says it's contaminated. And people are saying, we have lived long enough like this. We're alive. The key line by John Marley, who I mentioned, who is Mr. Waltz, from The Godfather, says, yes, Mr. Goldsmith, and I'm paraphrasing, we are alive, but we aren't living. And that, to me, sounds very, very relevant to the way people are feeling now. Yes, we are living each day. We are alive. We're hopefully healthy, but we don't feel like we're living. We are social animals, and we are being told we can't be social. We cannot see friends. We cannot see family. We cannot go walk, you know, and play baseball. Or we all know that we can't do. We all are aware of what we can't do. But I think that's been bubbling up now in people. That, yes, we're alive. Yes, we're healthy, but we're not living. So amidst this push and pull, they still listen to Mr. Goldsmith, that who gets his information from the old man in the cave, and they are alive. Just barely, not happy, but alive. Well, an outsider comes in, James Coburn character, and you can see that he's kind of an agitator, and he's going from town to town and maybe robbing people or just who knows what he's doing. He's just sort of getting off on a power trip. There's no real central government anymore. It's just kind of Lord of the Flies. It's everyone for themselves. So he comes in and he's going to try to sort of be the leader of this group for a while. I don't know. And so he looks at the people and he says, what the heck is going on here? Have you seen you? You look terrible. And so this Mr. Goldsmith says, well, you know, we've been surviving barely, thankfully, to this man in the cave. And this guy says, the man in the cave? What kind of man in the cave? Who is this man in the cave? And he starts yelling at the people, you know, look at this man in the cave isn't taking care of you. And then his other two cohorts find all this food, and they find this wine. And he said, here, why aren't you eating this food? And they said, well, because the old man in the cave says it's been contaminated. He says, there's nothing wrong with this food. So now he starts to get the people riled up because now they're hearing another viewpoint. And it's a viewpoint that they want to hear. Whether they think it's right or wrong, they like this story. They've been accepting Mr. Goldsmith's story, that we have to hold on and listen to the old man in the cave because he's kept us alive. But underneath, they're getting frustrated, they're getting angry, they're getting restless, and here comes this outsider who is preaching just what they want to hear. Don't listen to the old man in the cave. Let's eat this food. Let's do what we want to do. Let's have fun. You people are walking ghosts. And so he demands that they all go to see this man in the cave, because he doesn't even believe there is a man in the cave. He just believes it's Mr. Goldsmith telling him this thing. Well, finally, things get pretty bad, and they go to the cave, and they are going to threaten to kill Mr. Goldsmith. Now they become a mob. Now they're completely on James Coburn's side. And they become a mob. They demand to go to the cave, and they go to the cave, and they demand to see the man in the cave. And begrudgingly, Mr. Goldsmith opens this cave door, and the people rush in. They're all crazed, and lo and behold, the old man in a cave is a surprise to them. And I won't give that away. But needless to say, they decide to go against the recommendations of the man in the cave, the recommendations of Mr. Goldsmith, and they follow James Coburn. And they ultimately give in to their repressed desires, which in this case is that food and that wine that they've been told not to eat by the man in the cave because it's contaminated. And so Mr. Goldsmith can only watch as the townspeople start to eat this food and drink this wine and have this big party as if they've been in jail. And just it reminded me of these people in Wisconsin just running to the bar without any thought of danger, any thought of what you've been told before. And of course they go out and they party, and James Coburn character says, "See, Mr. Goldsmith," and Mr. Goldsmith does not partake. He does not drink any of the wine. He does not eat any of the food. But everybody else does. All the townspeople, James Coburn and his cohorts, they're drinking the wine, they're eating the food, and they're mocking him. James Coburn's mocking Mr. Goldsmith, and the people are saying, "Come on, Mr. Goldsmith, drink up, eat up, come on, join us, this is great." And he just kind of shakes his head because he's fearing the worst. And he's seeing them give in to their basest desires and as opposed to their logic. And of course, there are consequences to be paid. And I'll leave it at that. I'm not going to give you the final ending. But needless to say, mob rule is not always the best way to go. It may be comforting, but many times it is not the most informed. It is not the most logical. It is not the most rational. It is mostly guided by emotion and fear. And as I said before, the lemming effect. We follow, if he's doing it, I'm going to do it. And I'm afraid we're getting to that point here. And I hope that we're not opening too soon. I talked to you several podcasts ago about starting sports too soon. I understand the need to open our society, and I get it. But I hope we're not choosing accepted casualties because of it. Are we just crossing our fingers? Are we just rolling the dice and hoping? Because that doesn't work. And that's what happened to the people in the episode of The Old Man in the Cave. So I would urge you in these days of, we all have to make our decisions as to what to do personally as well as collectively. And there's not a lot of places to go for wisdom. We look to our leaders, we look to our friends and our family, we look inside ourselves and we decide to make these decisions. And we hope that hopefully they're based more in logic and more in information. They are in just pure blind faith and just one big crossed finger that nothing will happen, because many times just hoping it and willing it and crossing your fingers, that does not lead to good results. So if you're looking for an answer, I'm not saying that this episode will provide you with that. You shouldn't live your life by this. But it's an intriguing cautionary tale. It at least might make you think. It may just give you a moment of pause, a moment of reflection. If you are on one side of this fence or the other. The Old Man in the Cave from November 1963. Rod Serling. He did not write it, in fact, but he did write the screenplay for it, but it was based on another story. But it's got Rod Serling's tone and dialogue and, you know, all over it. And in fact, I'll just tell you the last postscript at the very end. Mr. Goldsmith, survivor, an eyewitness to man's imperfection, an observer of the very human trait of greed, and a chronicler of the last chapter, the one reading suicide. Not a prediction of what is to be, just a projection of what could be. This has been The Twilight Zone. The Old Man in the Cave, The Twilight Zone. I hope this is not a prediction, but it's certainly worth watching. Great show, relevant as ever, and maybe it can teach us a lesson for your submission. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com, or it is available wherever you download your favorite podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to that platform, rate this podcast, but most of all, tell your friends. Send them a message, send them a link, send them the good word that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and they should make it their favorite podcast, too. Your loyalty and your devotion is much appreciated. Hope you've enjoyed episode 209. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, the only podcast from the end of the web to your screen into the Twilight Zone.